Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. An international master teacher, speaker, and author, Canadian-born Andrew Horenick has been a spiritual advisor for 30-plus years, a student and teacher of Tibetan Buddhism for 28 years, and has sat 40,000-plus hours in meditation. She's worked with luminaries such as the Dalai Lama, Bishop Desmond Tutu, and for the United Nations. Currently living in Australia, her 5 books, 4 CDs, and numerous programs aid people on their journeys of self-discovery through both the spiritual and material worlds. Angela is an agent of change who supports, celebrates, and exalts conscious transformation in all areas of life. Hi, Angela. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Thank you, Leanne. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
Yes, please.
Alrighty. Yes. Do you want to tell us a bit about where you are now? What's actually happening for you right now?
Well, in the present tense, I just, like over the Easter weekend, I just launched a 40-day prosperity meditation program for people. And I am in the process of creating a teacher training program so to train teachers so that I can clone myself and have others go out in the world and spread my message. And there's more good things coming. So like that's right present tense in the moment. I'm going to start traveling again. I'm going to be in Perth. I'm going to be here in the Gold Coast in Brisbane doing some presentations on one of the topics that's closest to my heart, which is about abundance and spirituality. So money and materiality. So that's sort of a forte that I have coming from my background. And I kind of put it quiet in 2015, and I'm kind of resurrecting it now again in 2018. I've done a whole bunch of other stuff, and I got a pilgrimage coming up, taking a group to India. So I do that every year.
Oh, nice.
So that's coming up in November, December. Yeah. So That's right present time. Present time. That's what's happening.
So do you want to tell us a bit about what your story is, how you've got up to this point?
I started in Winnipeg in Canada, which is sort of like the Siberia of Canada. It is cold. It's like minus 40 there in the winter. And when I was a kid, I grew up with a lot of abuse, sexual abuse, violence, neglect, terrible neglect. And when I was 14, I made a key decision because I was suicidal. I was extremely suicidal as a youth. And I made a key decision then that if I could make it through, I would, you know, devote my life to helping people. That if I, you know, if my story, if my pain, because it was so tremendous, so early on, that if I could just hold on and not kill myself, then I would, that's what I would do for my life. And that's what I've been doing my entire life. I've, you know, at the age of 18, I was counseling. I was rape and suicide counseling. And then in my 20s, I met Buddhism. And I also, along with all of that, I became an alcoholic. So I used alcohol as my go-to medicine because of the neglect. Well, not because of that, but you know, I'm self-medicating. So the alcohol really played a big part in my early life. And I was also doing high-level spiritual practices. I met my teacher in my 20s and was, you know, doing tantric practices and retreats and going to India and all kinds of places all over the world at the same time getting drunk and being alcoholic. So it was this tandem thing until I sobered up in my 30s. And when I sobered up, everything changed. And I also needed a way to make a living. Because I previously had also been a writer. So I was publishing books and, you know, you don't make a lot of money writing. And in my early 30s, I think I'd published 3 books. But I knew that I needed something tangible. And I had always been good with money. I'd always been able to manifest because my connection with the divine has always been amazing. And I needed some earthly skills. So I started working with an accountant. And that's a whole story unto itself. He was my accountant who helped me and my partner at the time with our taxes and stuff. I went working with him and worked with him for 3 years to apprentice to gain enough confidence in the accounting world to start my own practice. So I, for 18 years, did taxes for people and guided them spiritually through their finances. And people were like, yeah, what an odd combination, and spirit and money. And it's like, yeah, totally contradictory, and it works. So then that was a whole chapter, and I just left that chapter about 4 years ago. I sold that business only 4 years ago. And I've sold it at a time, my spiritual work, my workshops and being out in the world started to eclipse my tax work. What that means is that I started teaching internationally and doing programs. Like I have a half day presentation, then I move into a 2 day retreat, and then I have another level, and et cetera, et cetera. So that was building all over the world. I thought I can let my tax business go. So I sold it. And along the way, you can imagine all the bumps and grinds, and I moved countries in the middle of that too. And I've had the great good fortune to work with some of the leading luminaries in the world through my spiritual practices and teachings. And the Dalai Lama is a personal teacher of mine, and Bishop Desmond Tutu, worked with him. And I was the executive director of the Interspiritual Center of Vancouver. And with that, I worked with the United Nations. So I've had many beautiful things happen as a result of the spiritual work and the financial work that I've been doing. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a background of the story.
Certainly. Varied and very different, having the money and the spiritual side together. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Did you have a number of tipping points for change though? Like you've said, you've been on a little bit of a journey, and what sort of tipping points have you had?
Okay, so they've been kind of continuous. And I reckon it's almost like having mini deaths. Like it's a death. It's not a tipping. It's never been a tipping point for me. It's sort of like I'm at the brink. It's a life or death situation, and I must change. And as I said, you know, at 14, I had my first one. And then in my 20s, I brought out my first book about sexual abuse, about the abuse that was happening. And that was another tipping point, that I either go public and heal, or I cave in and I, you know, like you implode, basically. So that was a second one when my first book got published, when I was 24, 25. And then in my early 30s, it was my alcoholism. That was a huge tipping point. I realized, I knew that alcohol had always been a friend to me and a crutch, and it was a go-to place. And then it started to betray me, and I knew. I didn't realize I was alcoholic. I mean, I like, this is what happens. It's like you go along the path and you use it, and then there's a line that we cross, and I crossed it and didn't realize it. So there I was in my 30s. That was a huge tipping point. Again, I was on my knees, and I was like, take me, I'm yours. I don't have a clue what to do anymore. And from there, things radically shifted and changed. And again, I mean, we have the benefit of our age, right? So then there's more tipping points. I would say the next one was moving to a new country and starting all over again, because I had everything going for me in Canada. And I chose to come to Australia and start my personal life, because up to that point, I wasn't married. I was single. I had big trust issues. So coming to a new country and not knowing anybody was huge. And then I got married, and that was massive. And then I guess in 2015, I had another big tipping point, which is my health started to fail, because everything was so beautiful. It was just growing and growing, and I didn't put the right structures in place to hold the magnificence. And so I ended up in hospital with a collapsed lung. So there's been a few major look in the face, look in the mirror, and what the heck are you doing? It's time for radical change.
Did you think they were like lightning bolts or just the slow rumble leading up to a certain point where you knew you had to make the change?
It's a bit of both, you know, because my whole life, it's a trajectory of change. Like I have known from early on that in order to prosper for me, I knew early on that I had to keep changing. And, you know, I'm a human being, so my resistance is great. And then the lightning bolt, I don't call it a lightning bolt. I call it, I hit a wall, yep. Right? Like you get a whisper to change and then you get a brick thrown at you and then you hit the wall. And I have to hit the wall sometimes. Now, you know, since 2015, I haven't hit walls, thankfully. I've been able to change from a different position, like from a position of love instead of that resistance. So it's a bit of both.
Yeah. So when you hit that resistance or hit the wall, are they the sort of challenges that sometimes you thought, oh, I'm just going to throw in the towel, or did you never think that way?
Oh, tons throw in the towel. You know, because I couldn't figure it out, you know, and it wasn't working the way I was doing it. So then it's in the throwing in the towel. I mean, even using that metaphor, that I think that's where the breakthroughs happen. Mm. I think that's where the surrender happens. And that's for me where the newness comes, the next level of hope. You know, I did a master's degree in my, I can't remember, it was in the 2000s. And I saw that in my 30s or 40s, I can't remember. And I remember after the first week or two feeling so stupid, you know, because I was early in my recovery from alcoholism, and I really thought they made a mistake. You know, I was reading everything twice, and I was going into class and everybody was so smart and I couldn't keep up, and I'd be asked to talk and I couldn't, and I just couldn't get out of my mouth what I was thinking. And I went to the director and I said, I think you've made a mistake. I don't think I should be here. And she said, you know, who's in that room that's making you feel this way? And I said, my dad. And she said, he's not invited. Let's ask him to leave. Like, he's not allowed to be in the room with you. So, like, it's been constant little overcoming hurdles after hurdles of right from, you know, that to my alcoholism to, you know, moving things online. I started doing things online in 2014. And it's not been easy, right? It's that in itself has got challenges. And, you know, I've been wanting to throw in the towel and, well, everybody else can do it. What's wrong with me kind of thing. So, you know, just professionally. And my husband had a bad depression and he was suicidal a few years ago. So it's like throw in the towel from business and just, you know, focus on personal life. So many, many times I've kind of like, okay, I'll let it go. And that's usually when I get a resurgence of power and strength that up to that point was unknown to me. Unknown.
So keeping one foot in front of the other, did you have a big vision that kept you going? Or?
I suppose so. I mean, the vision is to become enlightened. And it's a big one. Like that's a biggie. Mm. And in my Buddhist tradition, it's not only to become enlightened, it's to become enlightened in this lifetime. So I'm on the fast track. So it's the challenges that come with that have been equally as like, wow. And then I have to come back to, okay, you've asked for this, right? So it's about faith. It's about trust and the deepening of that every step of the way in business and in my personal life, which, you know, they just come together.
What about new possibilities? What's opened up for you from doing all what you're doing now as compared to what, you know, maybe years ago?
Okay. Possibilities. Well, the beautiful possibilities are I work now with people of a higher frequency, people that motivate me, that excite me. And that's what happens for me, is just like I reach my apex and I kind of go, this is great. Now, what else do I want? What more do I want? And then I have to look around in the world, because it's not going to be up the street. Who else is doing this? Who can mentor me? Who can help me? And then I reach out, because I really believe we need mentors. We need teachers. We need companions. We need somebody who's further down the track than we are to get, well, I do anyway, but I really believe that for anybody, to give us hope, to give us courage, to keep us persevering, to keep us, you know, just showing up. And so I've had coaches, I've had business coaches, I've had spiritual teachers, I've had mentors. I continue to have mentors and teachers and spiritual guides. And very blessed. I mean, I have worked with some of the world's best, and, you know, sat private retreat with the Dalai Lama. And one of my teachers, before he passed away, was the King of Mongolia. So, you know, very, very highly realized beings that have guided me with my goal. And then the business mentors, very, very established mentors that have realized the dreams financially that I would like to realize. So, yeah, there's always more. There's always somebody who's ahead of me. And there's always somebody who I can help. So it's like, you know, you can turn around and face them, like, or turn this way and help somebody up. And then on this hand, you put your hand out and get guided.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I love that. Awesome possibilities. So what's the most exciting thing that's going to happen in the future, do you think?
In the world or in my life?
In your life, the world, whatever you think. What excites you?
What excites me? Well, what really, really, really jazzes me is watching people's consciousness shift and change. And I've been doing this work for over 30 years. Like, I was meditating way before meditation was vogue. And I was talking to spirits and guides and guardians and all of that way before it was vogue. And now what really, like, excites me to see the possibility of the planet turning in that direction, right? And we're still haven't hit the tipping point, right? I'm an eternal optimist, and I know we have yet to hit the tipping point, because I still get, you know, oh, you're into woo-woo stuff. And it's like, yeah, well, that's, if you want to call it that, I'm good with that. You know, if that's what you need to say, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm making a lovely livelihood. I have an incredible life, and I know it works for me. So what gives me joy is that sparkle and the turning on of somebody's consciousness in a small way or in a big way. Because I've got programs for people who are just beginning to see their own light and goodness. And I've got programs for people who have been doing the work for 10 or 15 years. And they're, you know, we go to India and they have these massive, huge aha experiences. And there is no greater joy for me than watching somebody's life change and move towards the light, you know, and choose the light instead of the ego and instead of the depression or the darkness. So it's you know, concrete wise, there's all kinds of things that give me joy, but that's the main one.
I love that. All right, let's have a change in pace and do the speed round.
Okay.
What's your favorite book?
It's called Presence by Joseph Goldsmith, or Practicing the Presence. Yeah.
What about a mentor figure that's helped you the most?
Well, that was tough, because I realized, you know, on a spiritual plane, there are some, and then on a business plane, there are some. So my spiritual teacher, Zazen Rinpoche, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama, definitely big, big, big mentor spiritually. And then a man named Sean Clark, who is here in Australia, who's a Canadian, who really in 2011 helped me see my potential business-wise. So he was really formative, helping me form in a big, big way. Yeah.
What daily ritual works best for you?
Again, geez, that's a toughie, because I have so many that I turn to. But I would say of them all, mantras and meditation daily, even for me, if it's 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 45 minutes, that turning inward and that silence, absolutely 100% is my go-to. And then on top of that, you know, there's EFT and then there's the EMD. Like I've got like a huge toolkit. But remembering my teachers and remembering the sacrifice that they've made to be here, that I can follow them, and anything to do with the mind, meditation, mantras, any of the mind training stuff.
Mm, yeah. What's your favorite food?
Rocket salad with pears and walnuts.
Oh, nice.
With balsamic vinegar. You got to add that, because the balsamic vinegar, I could eat all by itself. I love it on strawberries with mascarpone. So like I'm in love with balsamic vinegar. Or not, it is caramelized balsamic vinegar.
Oh, sounds great. Do you like the country or the city?
Do I love the country or the city? Well, I'm a kind of a halfway gal. Mm-hmm. So where I live is, it's not right in the middle of a city, but nor is it on land out in the country. And when I saw your question to that, I thought, what city or country do I like? So Vancouver is a favorite city of mine, and Varanasi in India. So those are two cities that are very close to my heart. Mm. Yeah, as I age, I like the country more. Yeah. And when I was younger, I really, really liked fast cities. Yeah. So there you go.
What's your biggest piece of advice to give to others to help them make change in their life?
Well, that is such a huge question. You know, and I've got 4 or 5 dot points. I don't know whether we have time to expand, but...
You go for it.
Well, I mean, I guess the very, very first thing I would say, and I say to people, is we are all the same. We all have fear. We all have doubt. We all have sadness. And you know, whether you're a Tony Robbins or a Dalai Lama or just starting out, it's just a matter of what... I call it an octave. What octave of the scale you're on personally that you're ascending, right? And those are the things to overcome and to reach out, to have a mentor, to have a guide, and to be with people. I mean, even if you don't have a mentor or a guide, reach out to a friend. You don't have to talk about the problem that you're having. Just reach out and talk. Our society doesn't talk from the heart enough. We don't have enough community. We don't have enough time together. So it just talking is going to aid us through our doubt, our fear, our insecurities, because another human being is witnessing us and they're not going to put us down when we're in their presence or on the phone. I like to say you can rest, but never give up. So there is time and need for rest in our life, but not to give up the dream or the goal. Or turn around and sort of, you know, like absolutely say, I can't do this. And you know, 2-3 years ago, I had to sit and rest. And it felt like I had been sidelined by the divine. Like, you know, I wanted to play basketball. I wanted to be on the court running, and I was sidelined. And it's like, sit on the bench. You're being benched for a while. And it was really good. It was really good for me to just realize that rest in a big way is very, very important. And I think to remember that change is a process, and it's got distinct steps, and that we need to be patient with the process. And I'm very impatient. So I've had to learn this lesson over and over and over again. And you know, like when you master patience, then you can master higher levels of ascension and come back. I come back continuously, like, and it's a process. You can't go from A to Z in one leap. And people so much do that, and they fall in that chasm, you know, in doubt. It's like, well, you have to raise your frequency incrementally. You can't just, you know, go from all to nothing. No, from nothing to all. Yeah, you can go from all to nothing. But I'm not proposing that. So, you know, many little things, but I think it's mainly to do with the mind.
Yeah.
And to be with human beings. We just so often isolate and think we're experiencing it just on our own. And we're not. You go to India, people have the same problems. You go to Canada, the UK, all over Australia, anywhere you go, human beings have doubt and fear and insecurity and self-worth issues. And, you know, it's like, that's the human condition. Mm. But we're not told that growing up.
Right? No.
So when we're with humans, we become human. And that's when we can overcome and go into the extraordinariness of being human, which is mastering our ordinariness.
Mm.
That's what I say. If we can master ordinariness, then we become extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such powerful advice. I love it because I'm all for the being with people. I think we've forgotten a lot of that connection. It's just been missing from a lot of people, and I don't realize the power that's in that connection. So, yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
Wow. Mm-hmm. What would I tell my former self? I like that way of putting it. And it's going to make me cry, but it's that we don't know how deeply we're loved, and that if I could tell my 14-year-old self or my 22-year-old self who was embroiled in her alcoholism and her darkness that there is so much love here for you, for, you know, me in the past tense, beyond what we can even fathom, and to hold on, and just to hold on, I guess that would be it, you know, that the love is beyond what we can even fathom. You know, I wouldn't want to, I would love to change things in the past, right? I don't wish any of the pain and the torture that I had to go through. I don't wish that, and I would never want to repeat it. And you've heard it said, and we all know it, is that that's what makes us who we are today. However, if I had had a little bird sitting in my ear saying, the love you have, like right now going for you, Ange, is so immense. That would have really, really helped. Because I was so alone and so isolated. So, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, Andrew, and sharing your story. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners will get a lot out of that. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you, and we'll end it there?
Sure. I can give you an email. Mm-hmm. And it's a simple email, but I'm going to have to spell my last name out because that's always the hard part. So it's Angela at AngelaHrynek.com. So it's Angela, HryniuK.com. You can find me on Facebook easy. I've got a public profile. I've got multiple pages. I'm totally accessible. Love to hear from people.
Thank you so much for your wonderful time today.
Thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing, Mia.
You're welcome.
Podcast. Okay. Thanks. Blessings.
Igniters, Angela has experienced so much pain in her life, and now she devotes herself to helping others. I loved her tip on mastering being ordinary to then experience extraordinary. If you want to contact Angela, you can email her on angela@angelahrynek.com. That's AngelaHrynuK, or find her on Facebook. If you want to learn how to live a bigger life full of fun and adventure, contact me through my website, leanneblaney.com.